From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Throneberry.
And good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. We are so excited and honored to have you tuning in today. We've got a wonderful program. We've got a lot of important guests, and I just want to kind of give you a little update as to what's going on here today. We're going to be talking with a gentleman from the Pentagon Credit Union about one of their programs that they have going on. We've got a representative from the Catholic War Veterans of America. And we've also got a great story coming up in the second half of the program about a World War II POW. And so we're excited to have these people on the program today. And we want you to give us a call if you have a question or a comment at 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825. A lot of things going on out in the world. But there was one thing I thought that might be important. You know, I like to bring you a little news every once in a while that's happened, and this is kind of a good piece of news I got this morning. It says disabled veterans to be exempted from pension cuts. Congress is finally doing something that they're supposed to do, it looks like. It says a massive spending bill taking shape on Capitol Hill is likely to repeal a recently enacted pension cut for disabled veterans. It seems that they forgot in their, you know, one of their bills that they were going to lower the cost of living increase for veterans who are not only were disabled but also retired. And so they decided that after the 23 million veterans that are out there, you guys and men and women don't seem to realize how much power that you've really got. I guess they must have sent a few emails and a few phone calls, and the next thing you know, boop, it's gone. It's not in the bill anymore. So congratulations on that. And remember that there is power in numbers, and we want to make sure that we utilize that power efficiently. Remember, the government seems to be wanting to cut back on everything. And those of you that are veterans that have worked hard and that are possibly disabled, that you are entitled to the benefits that you are receiving. So we have to make sure that they don't go about cutting those benefits after they promised them along the way. Remember, George Washington said, you're not going to be able to keep an army going if you don't treat the people that were in the army before, respectfully and to take care of them. And it seems like an ongoing issue. With all of the conflicts, coming to an end around the world, it seems like people are going to start forgetting that you men and women that did this, you are at the front lines. You are the ones that put your lives on the line for the rest of us. And we greatly appreciate it, especially to the 1% that are in the active military today. That's a small number right there. But so it's up to us, the other 23 million veterans out there, to make sure that you're taken care of. So we want to make sure that that happens. So pay attention to what's happening. Listen to Veterans Radio. We'll keep you informed as to what's happening on the news. As I mentioned, we're going to have a couple of interesting guests today, and we're going to start off right now with Christopher Flynn. And Christopher is head of the Pentagon. Let me read this correctly so I don't mess it up too badly. There we go. The Pentagon Federal Credit Union Foundation, or Penn Fed Foundation, recently announced that it has helped more than 200 military families across 40 states last year alone to attain the dream of owning their first home through its Dream Makers program. Christopher Flynn is the president and CEO of the foundation. And Christopher, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Great to be here.
It's obviously, it's something that I never heard of, and no offense to you guys, but you can thank Allison for getting me this information. Tell me a little bit about the Pentagon Credit Union Foundation and what it is that you do, and especially this particular project.
And I think is that there are, when you hear what I have to say about our programs, you'll see that it's really to help, as you just described, the people who defend our country, and we want to have set up programs so that they can also achieve the good life, as I put it, in that way. The Pentagon Federal Credit Union Foundation was founded in 2001 by the just before 9/11 by the Pentagon Federal Credit Union, because they saw a need to increase financial literacy within the military community. And the first program they came out with was one to fight predatory lenders. As we all know, is that outside of most bases in this country are pawn shops and payday lenders and predatory lenders that charge people, 10 to 40% a month for their things. So we have a program. We've partnered up with 15 other credit unions around the country. A program basically is that anybody in active duty, that is including Reserve and National Guard, can walk into one of our partners' office and get a loan up to $500 on their signature for an application fee of $5. Okay. If there's no interest or no other fees charged in this loan, if they can't pay it back, they then, if they go to financial counseling, they can have this loan rolled three more times and no interest, no fees. And we've helped out about 6,600 families since then. The second part of the program that we have is we recognize the need, as you just described, is people need a chance to attain the American dream. No matter what has happened, what you read in the press today, still owning a home is a good thing for the long-term financial stability and finances of a family. So that we have a program called Dreammakers, which basically goes is that anybody, a veteran, anybody in Department of Homeland Security or anybody in the DOD structure, if they qualify for a first-time home buyer, for every dollar they put up, we put up $3 and we'll go up to $5,000 to allow people, and they get a mortgage from anybody. It's got to be a fixed-rate mortgage, and they've got to have some equity in the house, mm-hmm. And we'll give them a grant up to $5,000. No strings attached.
I was going to say, this is a grant, folks. This is a grant, not a loan.
It's a grant.
Wow.
So that this year, this past year in 2013, we gave 205 families in 39 states, and some in your state of Michigan, where you mm-hmm. are, the chance to get it. And this year we look to increase that number 20 to 25%. So that's a really a great process. But the other thing they have to do is they have to go to a HUD-approved first-time home buyers seminar and come back with that certificate, because there's a significant difference in owning versus renting.
Right, absolutely.
So we want to have that done. The other program that we have, Major, that may interest your listeners is that we have teamed with the Federal Home Loan Bank of Atlanta to do rehab of veterans' houses, and basically is that it is for low to moderate income veterans. There is something called a Metropolitan Statistical Area, which is put out by HUD, which basically is that anybody, and they have, this is the average income for various sized families in various areas around the country. For people who are below that, we can work out to give a grant to them of up to $15,000 to refurbish their houses. And we did about $450,000 worth of these grants in last year. We would have done more, except we and the Home Loan Bank ran out of our funding. So this year we hope to do $1 million worth of that type of thing, and then get grants up to $15,000.
This is amazing. We're talking with Christopher Flynn, who is the CEO of the Pentagon Federal Credit Union Foundation, and all of these things are available on your website.
Yes, if they just come through the website, there's a thing they can click through. They can make a Dreammakers application right on the website. There's other things they can go. And you'll see the contact us and our website. They can either come through the credit union's website, which is PenFed.org, and you'll see a click to go to the foundation, or to PenFedFoundation.org.
Okay. The last thing I wanted to ask you about was the Lee and Penny Anderson Defenders Lodge. Can you tell me a little bit about this? This is something else.
Yes, and I think this is really where it came in, is that going back, and we have another program called our Military Heroes Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And the Military Heroes Fund was actually started in the fall of 2001 when the first wounded came back from Afghanistan. And they arrived at Walter Reed Hospital here in Washington, and they didn't have anything. And we got a call from somebody who said, can you get the basics, gym shoes, running sweatsuits, toiletries for the veterans. So we started out doing that. And as things went evolved and more people came in, we also saw that there was a need for, as a family would come in from, say, Michigan to Walter Reed to care for a wounded soldier, there was a need for daycare. So we started providing daycare. But also was what we saw that Walter Reed did not have hospice rooms. So we built two hospice rooms at Walter Reed, and in these in the evolution of the process, the head of the Palo Alto VA, which is the top polytrauma center for the VA in the country, came and said, "Listen, we've got a problem. A lot of our patients who are coming in for 1 to 7 days worth of treatment." Are having a tough time, and Palo Alto, as we're all aware, is one of the more expensive areas in the country for accommodations. We have a problem is that a lot of these people are either not coming for their, a lot of these veterans are not coming for their treatment because of the cost, because they're deferring their money for their children and other things, and we have this problem. So we, our board came up with an idea to build a hotel on campus there.
Oh.
And we just finished, and it will be open in the next 90 days or so, 104-bed, 52-room hotel. And it is looks like a four-star hotel, and the veterans will be able to go there coming in for treatment and stay for free.
That's amazing. And I realize that you're just one organization out there that's doing these things, and I just want to make sure that our listeners know how much that the civilian world is helping out these veterans. And, you know, even though, you know, that you're affiliated with the Pentagon Federal Credit Union, Christopher, I want to thank you for all that you're doing. I want to make sure that our listeners, you know, go to that website, and if you can give that one more time, then we'll have them.
They can go to PenFed.org. Or PenFedFoundation.org. And the one thing I want to say is that most of our funds are privately raised.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, almost all of our funds are privately raised. And the Pentagon Federal Credit Union pays all of the administrative salaries and the occupancy so that our private donations are almost getting 100% of every dollar is going to our programs.
Well, that's great.
The credit union also this year in 2014 is donating $1.5 million to our predatory lending program into Dreammakers.
Well, there you have it. You don't hear these stories anyplace else but on Veterans Radio. So Christopher Flynn from the Federal Credit Union Foundation, we want to thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio and hope to talk to you when you open your new hotel.
Well, thank you, and please let us know anytime we can, and anytime we can help our veterans, we're there.
Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, thank you. Have a great day.
You too. All right. Well, we're going to be, there's something that you didn't know, I bet, folks. So we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be right back with Julian Bauer from the Catholic War Veterans of America. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu. Or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and I want to remind people that we were talking to Christopher Flynn from the Pentagon Federal Credit Union Foundation about some great programs. So if you get the opportunity, I'd go out and check that website out and see what you can do. Looks like there's some pretty good deals going on there. Well, right now, we're coming up with our next guest, and this is Julian Bauer, and Julian is the second wait a second, National Second Vice President of the Catholic War Veterans of the United States. Julian, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good morning, Dale. Thanks for inviting us on Veterans Radio. The second national, or the National Second Vice Commander.
Oh, okay.
A little confusing, I guess.
I don't know. It's still early for me. But
me too.
Julian, when we were put in contact together, I asked you to and I wanted to hear a little bit more about what the Catholic War Veterans was about and some of the stories, and you wanted to talk about what you do. So let's start off right with that, Julian. Tell us a little bit about the history of the Catholic War Veterans and how you differ from the other organizations.
Okay, great. Well, the Catholic War Veterans was organized in 1935 by a former World War I Army chaplain, Father Edward Higgins of Astoria, New York. We received a pontifical blessing from Pope Pius XI that same year. In 1984, we were granted a congressional charter signed by President Reagan. Now we have approximately 9,000 members nationwide, and you have in Michigan about 850 members. Our states with larger numbers, of course, are in New York and Pennsylvania and Ohio. When you get farther south or west, we have fewer members. Down in Florida, we have only 135 members.
We have to work
on
that.
But our basic mission is to be of greater service to God, country, and to one another. As I said, we'd like all 9,000 of our members to be more active in their parish, and we'd like to help our members retain their faith as well as to defend it. Now, all service organizations have been declining in numbers, as you probably know, and we're no different. We want to increase our membership, particularly in the south and western part of the country. So we started in the east, and that's where most of our members are located. 25% of the military is Catholic, and there's no reason why we shouldn't have 15,000 to 20,000 members nationwide. Most Catholic veterans just don't know that we exist. Even many parish priests don't know that we exist, yet we've been around for 78 years. Our national recruitment weekend begins next Saturday and Sunday, and at that time, we'll have an opportunity to allow others to hear about us. Now, having served in the military, we also recognize the need for military chaplains, and the shortage that exists now is serious. Only 8% of the military chaplains are Catholic, and the other chaplains cannot say Mass, hear confessions, or distribute the Eucharist. Catholic military men and women going into harm's way need these services. So we support the efforts of the Archdiocese for Military Service in acquiring additional chaplains, and we've collected monies for seminarians who promised to spend a couple of years as chaplains.
Oh,
this
okay.
is a two-way street, of course.
Mm-hmm.
For one out of every 10 new seminarians comes straight out of the military. Another 10% comes from a military family. That means one out of every 5 seminarians has some connection to the military. Another of our ongoing efforts is to speed up the veterans' disability claims. And we have a volunteer, Jose Garcia. He spends many hours down at the VA examining folders, seeing whether additional proofs are necessary. Other volunteers comfort hospitalized veterans at VA medical centers around the country. We need additional volunteers to keep these services going. We also want to support veterans' families through such outreach programs as the one initiated by the Maryland Office of Veterans Affairs. We arranged for Secretary Ed Chow to meet with family members after all the masses at the Church of the Resurrection in Ellicott City. For veterans and their families overseas, we collect unneeded cell phones to trade in for telephone time so they can call back home. And we collect discount coupons so that our families overseas can obtain discounts at PXs and commissaries, saving them a considerable amount of money. We're also interested in seeing that our youth does not become overwhelmed with this
sectarian.
Secularism.
Secular, okay.
Secularism that we see out there in the public today.
Right.
So we sponsor nationwide poster contests on Catholicism and patriotism. using such themes as Keep Christ in Christmas and Support Your Military Personnel, that type of thing. Well, over there in Roseville, Michigan, you have a post, I think it's called the Albert Doyle Post. They donated $23,880 last year.
Wow.
$8,350 to veterans and their families, $4,000 in scholarships, $2,750 to sponsor Memorial Day parades, and the rest for other purposes. They raised funds by holding Texas Hold'ems.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the next one is, I believe, February 12th through February 15th.
There we go. There's
Lee, the Michigan Department commander. Pardon me?
No, I was just going to say, just reminding our audience, there's an opportunity to help out here in the local area.
Right. And you can call Ken Klee. He can provide additional information. He's at 586-260-4200. Other posts have other ways to raise money, bingo, restaurant rebates, crab feasts, etc.
Mm-hmm.
We're all different, but we all have one goal, and that's to help our members retain their faith as well as to defend it.
Well, I just wanted to go back, and as I was looking at your website, and I want to remind our audience that the website for the Catholic War Veterans is cwv.org, and they've got a lot of great information on there, not only about their association, but also what you're trying to do in increasing your membership, and also the message that you're trying to get out there. It seems that you mentioned the idea of this secular—I can't even say it myself now.
Secularism
that you were talking about is that you are promoting the values that many of us grew up with, and they're not just Catholic values; they're just American values. And
That
this is something that you're emphasizing for your members?
Well, we are Catholic, and we emphasize that aspect in our organization. We attend Mass as a unit, particularly on Veterans Day and Memorial Day. We hold monthly Masses sometimes, and other times on Fifth Sunday Masses.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember one Veterans Day Mass, a post advertised a lunch after Mass of fried Spam and bad GI coffee to everybody that attended the Mass. And you'd be surprised how many people showed up for that. I can't believe it myself. On Memorial Day, one post held a flag-raising ceremony with a local Boy Scout troop. They said the Pledge of Allegiance and sang the national anthem. Then they marched into Mass together. After Mass, all those in attendance were invited to a complimentary breakfast of coffee and donuts. So we are very Catholic.
Donuts is not just Catholic. I happen to know a few Methodists that like to eat donuts after church services themselves.
That's right. Now we have a veterans advisor at Towson State University. He offers to advise any Catholic, or any veteran, actually, on how to select the suitable curriculum for his or her career goals,
mm-hmm.
or even how to become acclimated in university life. Our national chaplain, Father John Sheehan, manages a national library for the blind, Catholic blind. He will provide free Catholic literature in Braille, and it doesn't have to be sent back. You can keep it. Call him if you're interested, 646-853-1820. You do not have to be a blind veteran to receive this Braille.
I'm sorry to cut you off here for a second, but this information, is this available on your website?
Some of it is.
Okay, because I'm saying that some of these people don't write down phone numbers very quickly, and so I want to make sure that they have the opportunity. Maybe they can go down there and see if there's a guest book on there.
I'll give them a telephone number and an email address later.
Okay. There's a contact us link on your website.
So there is.
So that
right.
people can get a hold of this.
And you've already given them that address. So.
Right, the CWV.org.
Right, that's Catholic War Veterans, CWV.org, right.
Right. We're talking with Julian Bauer, who is the second commander. I'm not going to even bother trying to figure that out again. National second vice commander of the Catholic War Veterans of the United States. And we're just talking about how their organization is, you know, it's another service organization that's out there, but it they're kind of narrowing it down to Catholic veterans more than anything else. In fact, my understanding is that you have to be Catholic in order to become a member of this organization, correct?
You do. You must be Catholic, and you must be a veteran. And even nowadays, you don't even have to have been in a war combat. As long as you were in the active service for 90 days, you can become a member as long as you're Catholic and a veteran. It's pretty much the same rules as the American Legion had. We're all members of other veterans organizations as well. I was a commander of an American Legion post. But we're narrowing it down, as you suggested, into the Catholics because that's what we're helping promote, Catholicism.
I received an email this morning from a Catholic priest that we'd had on our program a couple of times, and he was very grateful that we were doing this program and that he wanted to encourage the Catholic members of our audience and that are veterans out there, you know, to check out your organization because it's something that, you know, that might appeal to them a little bit more because, as you mentioned, so many of these service organizations are losing members. And mostly it's through attrition, unfortunately. I mean, so many of the World War II veterans are passing on. But the idea of these younger veterans is that we need to provide them with a place where they can go and feel comfortable. And if they want to talk about their experiences, they can, and they've got a willing listening audience. So,
but it's not just that we have smaller numbers, and we have a smaller percentage of the population that's going into the military now than we did, let's say, in the Second World War.
Right.
And once they get into the service, they're losing their faith because there aren't enough chaplains to go around. Mm-hmm. And they're being inundated with this secularism. So we want to bring back their faith to them, and this is one way to do it.
Well, I would certainly encourage people to check out your website, you know, these Catholic war veterans, and, you know, see if it's something that appeals to you, or maybe there's a member of your family, our listening audience here, of course, we're on Ave Maria Radio, it's probably predominantly Catholic listeners, and so we want to encourage them to check out the information that you've been talking about, Julian.
Right. Well, you've probably seen the nationally televised Veterans Day activities at Arlington National Cemetery.
Yes.
With the President of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these activities are planned by 25 service organizations, and we're one of the 25. We will be the primary agency for the 2019 activities. This day is important to all veterans, so we have to get started to gather some of the necessary funds for our sponsorship. And right. It will cost us about $120,000, which we don't have right now. So we want to expand.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not all work and no play. My post promotes camaraderie through a bocce team.
Okay.
In fact, we were the Howard County champions last year. This year we came in second or third.
Oh, no. Where is your post?
In Maryland, Ellicott City, Maryland.
Okay.
And we also fund bus trips with the family to watch the Naval Academy's football team. I enjoy the family Christmas dinners at a local restaurant since mm-hmm. the new post commander has started a new custom of buying all the champagne for everyone.
Oh.
I thought that was great. So all posts do similar type things to bring their members together.
I was going to say, that's one way to get them to show up.
That's right. We hold early morning breakfast at Bob Evans twice a month just to socialize.
Mm-hmm.
So that type of thing is something we do. Now, we do support our bishops, and a mm-hmm. number of posts protested the affordable care mandates on contraceptive insurance.
Right.
My post made protest signs, and our speakers asked for repeal of these regulations in front of Congressman Cummings' office. Other posts protested in other ways. We wore our Catholic war veterans uniforms and just sort of tried to ignore the television cameras. So we're still giving some thought to doing the same in front of the Little Sisters of the Poor to show our support for them.
Well, you know, I think that's one of the things that you mentioned on your website is that, you know, there are so many of these little isms out there and people keep trying to tell people how to live their lives. And you can't Well, this is my own little rant. You can't legislate morality, and you can't force people to do things that they don't believe
in. Vote your conscience.
And yeah, you have to vote your conscience. And you know, I think that they need to leave some things alone and just let these people decide on their own. And,
that's right.
You know, and I admire you for doing what you are doing. I find that, you know, it's very difficult sometimes to get out there and protest what you believe in because, as you mentioned, the cameras are there or there are other, you know, other people that are there that don't necessarily agree with you. And, you know, sometimes it can get a little bit tense, but I admire your courage and I want to, you know, thank you for being on Veterans Radio and talking to us about what the Catholic War veterans can do, not for their veterans, but also for society in general. And I encourage everybody to go to their website. It's Catholic War Veterans, CWV.org. Check it out. There's a lot of great information on there. And if you are Catholic and you're a veteran, here's a great organization for you.
And if you can't use the internet, you can always write to us, Catholic War Veterans, 441 North Lee Street in Alexandria, Virginia, 22314. The phone number there is at our national headquarters is area code 703-549-3622. So
okay.
we hope that we can find some new members, but also that somebody will stand up and say, "I would like to start a new post."
There you go.
We have posts in 21 states. And there's no reason why we shouldn't have a post in all 50 states. We have a national office, and they would be happy to send out a post starter kit with all the information that's needed to any interested party in any state of the union.
Okay.
All you have to do is write to us or email me at callbauer@verizon.net, callbauer@verizon.net. And I'll answer any questions you might have and help you get started. I'll tell you if there's a post near you. Whatever we need to get you into the organization, we'll do.
Well, we'll do that, what we can for you. And so, Julian, thank you very much. Good luck on your recruitment next week, and hopefully we can get you, maybe we can put you in touch with some other radio stations to get your word out. Thanks very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale. Appreciate it.
All righty.
Bye now.
We'll be back in just a moment with Otis Timberlake, World War II veteran, POW. His daughter's in the studio, so I have to wake her up and tell her that we're going to be talking on the radio here in a second. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio live on WDEO 990 AM in Ann Arbor, Michigan, WMAX 1440 AM in Saginaw, Michigan, WDEO 98.5 FM in Naples, Florida, or listen online at AveMariaRadio.net.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. It was Staff Sergeant Henry Irwin's job on the lead B-29 to drop a phosphorus canister as a marker when they reached the assembly area over enemy territory. Details after this.
Check it out, it's the Terminator. Hey, when'd you get back, huh?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Why are you being so jumpy? Put all that stuff behind you, okay?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org because we know where you're coming from. Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Irwin positioned the canister in the launch tube and pulled the pin at the pilot's orders. The flare dropped and then flew back into the plane. It exploded in Irwin's face, spewing flames just feet away from tons of incendiary bombs. Smoke filled the aircraft momentarily, blinding the pilot and co-pilot and putting the plane in a steep dive. Irwin dropped to his knees and, unable to see, felt for the canister. Although it was burning at 1,300 degrees, he picked it up, cradled it to his body, and began crawling to the cockpit. He yelled to the co-pilot to open the window and threw the flare out. The crew then turned its fire extinguisher on him and began to feed plasma into his arm. Doctors were sure he was going to die and transferred him to Guam. Major General Curtis LeMay recommended him for the Medal of Honor and got authorities to expedite the award so it could be presented before he died. 1 week after the attack, LeMay presented the medal to Irwin at a bedside ceremony attended by the rest of his crew and his brother. Irwin surprised doctors by surviving. He was flown home to Alabama, where he was hospitalized for 2.5 years and underwent numerous operations. Henry Irwin died on January 16, 2002. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft. But then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowing reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B.
And we are back on Veterans Radio, and as the lead-in would imply, we're going back in time to World War II. Joining me in the studio right now is Patricia Turk, and Patricia is introduced me to her dad, Otis Timberlake, and Patricia was a student of mine last semester, and she came up to me during class one time, and she says, I think I have a story for you on Veterans Radio. So I'm going to ask her to kind of get closer to the microphone here. So we're all set. And Patricia, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good morning.
So tell me a little bit about this story of your old man before I introduce him.
Well, growing up, I knew that my father was a POW in World War II. He was captured in Germany about this time of year, but that was it. And it wasn't until I married my husband, who was also an Air Force veteran, and they started talking, and my dad is now giving us a wealth of information of his time as a POW.
So, well, we're going to bring Pat's dad on the air right now, and we want to welcome to Veterans Radio is Otis Timberlake. And Otis, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, it's great to talk to you again, and I wanted to remind our audience, if you've got a question for Otis or anything that you'd like to know about Veterans Radio, you can call us at 877-573-7825. So, Mr. Timberlake, were you drafted?
No, sir. I volunteered to go in. They was worrying the heck out of me. I was working Newport Shipyard, and every time I turn around, they take me out of 5A, put me in 1A, and they had to go get an eye examination, a blood test. So I volunteered and went in.
And you volunteered for the Army?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and when did you go into the service?
Somewhere around the last of March, first of April of 1944.
Okay. So we're going to leap forward to the beginning of 1945, and you have just arrived in Europe. You got there just after the Battle of the Bulge, and you're on guard duty somewhere in France, correct?
Yes, sir, up around Colmar, up in the North Pole. Snow on the ground a little over 3 feet deep.
Wow, and it was cold, right?
Yes, sir. It hadn't got above freezing the whole time I was up there. 7-8 days. How many days it was? It's quite a few.
How did you end up getting captured? What was the story behind that?
Well, we went out there with guarding a gully or trench in the ground where the Germans could get tanks across or pull artillery guns and different things where they could cross over to the towards the American side. We was guarding this place, and I think it was somewhere around about 5 or 6 nights. Mm-hmm. We were to be there in the nighttime, and we were sleeping on the armor on a picnic table in our sleeping bags.
It's still cold. I'm freezing just thinking about this whole thing.
Yes, sir, it was cold. You take and spend the night in 3 foot of snow, you can understand.
All right, so you're guarding this area, and the Germans are continually seeming to be going on patrol, and then what happens?
Well, we've been doing this, and we've been watching nighttime as the Germans come out from that side and over on that side. Well, we've been pulling patrols between the lines, the same thing that the Germans doing. We had the thing, it's that they, the commander told us we could hit them if we wanted to, or we could slip down, be quiet, and let them pass on through, because all they're doing was checking to see if we was moving up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've been doing. We've been watching them. But we asked to move our foxhole, which we dug in the snow, that day. And he said, no, we had to go back to the same spot. That was the spot. And he said, I said, we told him that that we had been there and back so many times, the tracks were there, that they could see where we were. We was in danger. He said, we had to go back. That was the order. So we went back, and that's the night we got hit.
And what happened next?
Well, when they come in, two of them more or less advanced on us. We was in two different foxholes, three of us behind, me and my buddy. I forgot his name, but anyhow, they come in and they start shooting at us with a burp gun, and we had a bazooka because we had it there in case they started to come by over with tanks or something. Now, we shot two rounds with the bazooka at the patrol coming up. Three of them, when it was five of them, like it was five of us, three of them was, went back and two of them advanced. So after that, I think my buddy got hit or something that was there, and as I was trying to hook another round of a bazooka around in the tube, I noticed he was hit between the eyes. He was bleeding out his eyes, ears, nose, and mouth. We had shot the M1 rifle four or five times and threw two hand grenades apiece, I think. I think that's what it was. It's been quite a while ago. But anyhow, the three my buddies, they never opened up. So he was killed and I was captured.
Well, you mentioned also when I was talking to you the other day that you got shot in the helmet.
I got shot in the helmet three times that night. I got three holes in them. One made a dent in the back and the other one went through. I don't know where the third one went, but it didn't draw blood. I didn't get a scratch. Somebody had to be with me, the good Lord or the angel or somebody.
I guess so. If it went through and didn't do anything, that's amazing. I mean, I can relate to that. I had a round go off my helmet one time too, and it's awe inspiring when you look at the helmet and you go, oh, how did
yes.
I live through this one?
Yes, you take rounds were spinning in the snow. You wouldn't believe it, but them things would look like a ball of fire about 8 inches in front of my eyes.
Wow. I can only imagine. You were we're talking with Otis Timberlake, a World War II veteran who right now is going to become a POW. And so you were captured by the Germans, correct?
Yes, sir.
And how did they treat you?
Well, they didn't treat me too bad, except they like to starve me to death.
Oh.
They carried me back behind the lines. One of them did. I think we wounded maybe one. I can't say two of the others with a bazooka. I'm not positive. But they didn't come forward. Two came forward, and they took me. One took me behind the lines. Yeah, there was right there around Colmar. They carried me back behind the lines there, got in a brick building with a good fire, and then they asked me a few questions, but all I had to tell them was my name, rank, and serial number, and they finally gave up, and they ordered a car and carried me across the Rhine River on a scow that they pulled over and back with a hand winch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And they carried me over at the Hamburg, Germany, and I stayed in a small building, looked like a house of chicken with a wood stove in there. And I stayed in there about 3 days, and then they moved me to Hamburg, Germany, on them railroad cars with quite a few other prisoner of wars, too. with us, and on them cars with, say, 40 men or 8 horses. But I can tell you that car here had about close to 50 in it.
Wow, and this is one of the railroad cars that we've seen in the pictures where there's no facilities at all. There's a bucket in a corner, and you're crammed into this place.
That's it. It had, might have been opening at the top a little bit, and that just had slabs you could get, you know, wood and stuff up there where you could get air, but you couldn't get no, there's no way of crawling out.
Right. How did you feel at that time? Were you afraid? Were you...
Well, it wasn't nothing to do. Of course, you know, you was like everything, and depressed and everything, and you was worried and everything. And, because I had a wife at home with a young son, that was born in Fort Riley, Kansas, when I was taking basic training in mechanized cavalry. So, you know, all that was on my mind. So I wasn't feeling the best in the world.
But you ended up eventually at Stalag 5A?
They carried me from there, from Ham, Germany, to Hammelburg, Germany, which was an old terror camp, and they turned it into a prison camp. That's the first one I went to, and we stayed there right a while. The Americans come in. Of course, I ring you heard about, or heard maybe somebody else talk about the guys came in, the Imams and squad of men in to Hammelburg to get the listening men out and leave the others in there. Mm-hmm. So they picked up about 10 or 12 officers and went back, and the other thing they got about less than a mile back from the camp, and they started enjoying a drink, what I've heard. And Germans capped them over and brought them back and put them back in prison.
Oh, that wasn't very nice to do that. So I want to make sure that I don't miss part of this story here. But you were in Stalag 5A, and did they, when they separated the prisoners, did they put all the enlisted men in one prison camp and the officers in another one?
They in the prison camps I was in. I was in Hammelburg, Nuremberg, and Moosburg, and yes, they was all separated.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's all right. Can you describe the conditions a little bit in these camps?
Well, it wasn't very good. You knew all we had as far as clothes and underwear and so forth was what we had on our back. That was it. And, of course, you know, over in Germany and France, and place of water over there is no good. And we had no facilities, but we did have an outdoor latrine at most of the camps we was in.
Mm-hmm.
But the water is no good, so we had very little of that. And the food was scarce, too, very little food.
Mm-hmm.
What we got in the morning was about a half a cup of what they call coffee, but it wasn't coffee. It was toasted barley made, and they call it coffee. We got one slice of sourdough bread. It's the bread that the Germans made. You could keep for a year, wipe the mold off it, and eat it like you could do cheese. And we got one patty of Limburger cheese. That was breakfast.
I can't imagine what you guys smelled like.
I went that time, took one shower. That was in Nuremberg, and they steamed my clothes, and I put the dirty ones right back on. So, yes, and when I came out, they took them all and threw them in a pile and set them on fire. That was in Le Havre, France.
So tell me, what one of the stories that you mentioned to me is that when they move you from Nuremberg, I have to look at my notes here for the... From Nuremberg to Malzbach?
Moosburg,
okay. They all sound the same sometimes to me. But you were walking down the road, and the next thing you know, you got American planes flying over you.
We had three of them, 351 American fighters flying over. They seen the column coming out. See, the Americans was coming in and taking over Nuremberg, overrun Nuremberg, so they were walking us out, marching us out. And they flew over. The first plane swung around and made a couple bursts, and then he realized it was a POW. It wasn't German soldiers marching. And so the boys in the line, they took their shirts off and put their undershirts down and wrote POW, spelled POW out there. That is out there. You can look that up on the computer and you'll find it, because my son did that.
Right. You mentioned that story. So when they opened up on it, did you just dive into the trenches, or what happened?
Dived into the smallest spot.
And how small can you make yourself? Yeah, I can relate to that one, too.
Yes, sir. Dived in the lowest spot I could find. Because they're 50 caliber machine going coming in. Every fifth round was a tracer.
Yeah, I know. And it looked like a solid hose of red coming coming right at you. So were they moving? Where were they taking you? Were they moving you east towards?
Yeah, they was moving us kind of, more south. We were walking to Mooseburg is where we was, mm-hmm. That's where we was going. And we kept us there during the night and everything out there, and they guarded us. And they found a barn one night big enough we could sleep in the hay. But they had so we never could get out. And one night we stayed in our church, and we didn't. I don't know about the others. I didn't feel too good sleeping in the church because I was lousy and dirty and everything else. But it was a pretty church, and it had statues on the wall and all that stuff, and had a pipe organ. It was really, really a nice looking church.
It's amazing what you can remember, isn't it?
Well, I lost my wife about a little about. Almost 2 years ago now, since I don't know, being by myself, nobody but me and the dog, that a whole lot of things, you know, come back and wonder about what went on and like that. And I can tell you one thing, yes, it wasn't for the Red Cross parcel. We're getting every 2 or 3 days as we're marching and dividing one package up with about 4 or 5 men, we would have never made the march.
I've heard that before, and it's kind of amazing sometimes when you think about that the Germans allowed these Red Cross packages to get through. Why do you think they did that?
Well, I think some of them German soldiers was living off of quite a few of them along with what little bit we got. We always thought that they was getting more of them than we were.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that the German soldiers at that point in time didn't have a whole lot of food either.
Well, it's true that I noticed after I was liberated in Mooseburg, we got out in the outside and walked around, and me and another buddy, we walked back, you know, just looking at that small village over, and we come across a pile of building there, and there was the wooden heads of turned out. Of for the bullet part of wood for the burp guns, they must have been running out of lead, metal, brass, or whatever they use in them for the mixed shell. They had was making their heads out of wood.
Making wooden bullets.
Yep.
Wow. Huh.
That's for the ball come out the end.
My goodness. Yeah. Hey, how long were you a POW?
I was close to 8 months.
And how much weight do you think you lost during that time period?
I really don't know. I can't remember weighing it, but I was picked up weight when I went in. I didn't weigh over about 145, 150 pounds. But instead of losing weight, marching and so forth, and exercising and going through, my muscle built up good, and I put on about 175 pounds. So I think I got down close to about 130 pounds.
Wow, how did you feel when they when you were freed? How did that happen?
Well, we was in Mooseburg, and of course we put them in there, and they crowded us in there so bad. We were sleeping in a big tent. Behind the barbed wire in a big tent. And, of course, they had their towers with the machine gun up there, and then they always had a German guard always walking with a rifle walking the fence. Mm-hmm. And one minute they was all there, and the man walking the fence, and we turned around and won't a German in sight nowhere. Everybody was gone. We checked everything, and it was gone, so we cut a hole in the fence and viewed the town. And weren't many people walking around. Well, we've been hearing the shelling, the Americans coming in, mm-hmm. shelling and getting close every night for 4 or 5 nights, so we knew they was getting close.
How did you feel when you ran into the first American troops that you saw?
Oh, we felt good, man. We hugged them and shook hands with them, and it was an engineering group that came in there to put platoons across a small river at Mooseburg, and then we talked to them, and of course they was just as friendly as could be, so they invited us, me and the buddy, to have supper with them. Of course, we said, yeah, because we didn't see nobody preparing anything for us. So we told him, well, we don't have no mess kit or nothing either. He said, that's all right, we'll fix you up. So they did. They gave us a mess kit and everything. We had some hot coffee, which tastes some kind of good, and had stew beef.
Wow. I bet
the best stew beef I ever tasted in my life. But 2 hours later, it was too rich for me. I threw it all back.
Oh, that's too weird. And I was afraid that might happen when you finally get a meal. Well, we're talking with Otis Timberlake, who's a World War II veteran and POW, and he got to come home, which is amazing. How long after you got, released from the Germans, did you get back to the States? How long did it take?
Oh, it didn't. It took. What they did, we stayed there where we were with the Americans come in and took over the kitchen and everything, and they brought food in, and we, and of course the way they fed us where they would, way with the shape we was in, and build us up. There was no rich food in it, thing that would make us so sick. So they did that for about 2 or 3 days, and then they got 6x6s came in, and they loaded us up and carried us to the airport, not too far from there. And we flew us into Le Havre, France, and there they loaded us on and went through the where they had set up and everything to examine us. Get us a bath and give us a haircut and get us new clothes and good food. And about twice a day, half a time in the morning and in the afternoon, they would give us good, nice, good hot custard to drink. So, it was so good to feel good. And they gave us the examination to make sure we was fit and was in health enough to stay in the trip back on the ship back to the United States.
Well, Mr. Timberlake, I want to thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio. This is a great story, and I'm glad that we're able to get it down on tape now. And maybe we can talk to you again sometime in the near future. I'd like to find out what happened after you got home, okay?
Okay.
Thank you so very much, sir.
You're welcome, sir. Thank you.
All right. We'll be talking again to you.
I said hi.
Okay, she says hi. Now, we're just talking to Otis Timberlake, World War II veteran, POW. What a great story. Pat, thank you very much for bringing this story to me here on Veterans Radio. We're very excited.
You're very welcome.
And next week, I believe Bob is going to be back with a story about the Korean War. And we've got a lot of great things coming up in the next couple of weeks. So make sure that you tune in to Veterans Radio. If you have a story you want us to tell, let us know. Just go to our website, veteransradio.net, click on Contact Us, and we will do that. Until then, you are dismissed.
LLC.